if you haven't already done so, I'd ask if you would mute your cell phones, your telephones, and the speakers on your computer for us, please. That way it'll cut down on all the background noise. So the intent of this teleconference is to give you an update on current information on the rapidly evolving situation pertaining to COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus. And the intent is that we try and make this as widespread to all of our EMS agencies across the state as possible. And my name is Sam Vance. I'm the Chief of the Department of Health and Senior Services Bureau of EMS. And I'm joined today by the State EMS Medical Director, Dr. Sabina Braithwaite. This call is being recorded, and the recorder will be posted on the DHSS website as long as the content remains current. And if you would, please mute your phones and your computers.
Sam, go ahead. I'm trying to make you a co-host so we can mute the people.
If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase and re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press record. Press.
All right, Sam, you should be good to go again.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Okay, well, again, thank you all for joining us today. And I'd like to thank all of you for the proactive work and information sharing that has occurred to date to protect the health and safety of Missourians. And I'd like to give a special thank you to the Missouri Ambulance Association and the Missouri EMS Association for helping disseminate communications from the Bureau of EMS. So the number of cases of COVID-19 being reported in the United States and in Missouri is rising quickly. And this increase is expected given an increase in testing and ongoing rapid spread of disease across communities across the state. While these numbers are concerning, the increase isn't unexpected. More robust data will allow us to better understand and track the size and scope of the outbreak and strengthen prevention and response efforts. The state currently has 28 mobile sites active, as well as the DHSS lab and several private labs. And by the end of this week, it's anticipated that state will be able to process over 3,000 tests per day. And as of 2 p.m. yesterday, the state of Missouri has 255 positive cases with 5 deaths reported. And I want to read y'all some communication that came from the governor's office that I've tweaked a little bit to address EMS because I think it is relevant to all of us here. So on Saturday the 21st, the governor directed the director of the Department of Health and Senior Services to require new social distancing policies across the state. And this includes limiting gatherings to 10 or fewer people, as well as requiring Missourians to avoid eating or drinking at restaurants, bars, or food courts. Some cities and counties within the state have ordered stay-at-home orders, but nonetheless, a group of infectious disease doctors from across the state has updated the governor and that we are experiencing community transmission. And that means that Missourians are infecting each other with COVID-19. It's not just something that comes from travelers. So we should expect a significant increase in confirmed cases in the coming weeks, especially as testing ramps up. This is just the math of how infectious diseases can spread. Anyone can become infected, but the good news is that many cases have been and will be mild or even asymptomatic. young and old alike can become seriously ill and require medical attention. The data so far indicates that older people and those with pre-existing health conditions have much higher risk of severe complications. Fortunately, we haven't received any reports of EMTs or paramedics who have tested positive for COVID-19 yet. However, no one should be complacent. So I'd like to ask all of you on the phone here, is anyone experiencing staffing shortages as a direct result of personnel being a person under investigation, or have they tested positive for COVID-19? If you would, I'd like to for you to put your response in the chat box. And I will continue to talk as y'all would please respond to that in the chat box. So our best defense remains prevention. The sooner we act and change our behaviors, the better. This includes considering the initiation of screening processes for our staff.
It's unmuted.
Per CDC guidelines, consider measuring temperature and assessing symptoms prior to starting work. Alternatively, you may consider having providers report temperature and absence of symptoms prior to starting work. The Missouri Ambulance Association has examples from a couple of different states of screening forms on their website. Additionally, if you haven't already as a department or regionally, need to begin workforce protection planning. This planning includes suspending all non-essential personnel and visitors from the ambulance stations and firehouses. This also includes trying to set up non-congregate shelters for personnel for the purpose of maintaining separation from family, or non-congregate sheltering as quarantine. These are things that need to start being discussed and planned for. And so I'd like to ask everybody again to please respond in the chat box if this is something that you all have started doing, or if this is something that you still need to do. Okay. So this reality will be hard on our providers. And as Governor Parson has stressed, when facing a challenge like COVID-19, concern is understandable and responsible, but we need to avoid fear. We need to be there for each other as best we can to reassure, comfort, and listen. And what's a good way to do that? Well, a good way to do that is by keeping yourself informed with reliable information, and that way we can do what we need to do to protect others and ourselves. In the coming weeks, I urge us to take very seriously the advice of Governor Parson and our public health experts. Act upon it. Let's urge our family and friends to as well, and remember that every person who avoids infection helps protect others. In this time of challenge, our fellow citizens, communities, and families need us to be in the fight. So a few of the questions that we've been receiving here at the Bureau of EMS that I'd like to go over with y'all to answer some of these questions are, the first one is waivers. If you're on the Bureau of EMS listserv, you should have received this information last week on the executive orders issued from the governor that came down through the director of the Department of Health and Senior Services, Dr. Williams. And essentially that waiver is, it will allow ambulance services to triage the 911 calls to essentially instigate treat and no transport protocols. And it will also allow our ambulance services to transport to alternative destinations. And Dr. Braithwaite will talk a little bit more about this in just a few minutes from the medical director's perspective. Personal protective equipment request, the PPE request. We still, even as of this morning, have folks that are making their PPE requests through the Web EOC. I'd like to remind everybody that all healthcare PPE requests need to go through the healthcare coalitions. And I'm asking y'all here to spread that word to anybody and everybody that those requests need to go through your local healthcare coalition. And the instructions for that, the guidance document, as well as the request form and related information, can be found on the DHSS COVID-19 webpage. And on this last Saturday and Sunday, the Bureau of EMS staff helped fill, pack, and ship orders to 114 EMS agencies across the state. These were all the requests that we have received to this point, and those requests are gathered every Wednesday and will be filled as soon as our cash is resupplied, and the state anticipates another order from the SNS to arrive soon. Another question we've been getting a lot of lately is in regards to the provisional licenses that I know everyone's seen the email from the National Registry putting out. So I want to point out that they're still requiring completion of the educational program and the cognitive exam. And currently, the Bureau of EMS is looking into how we'll proceed with renewals and initial licensures in regards to courses being suspended. We haven't formalized a policy at this time, but we are working to make sure the policy considers all aspects of provider and patient safety through credentializing the cognitive and the psychomotor competency. We've also received some questions about online classes, and as with the provisional licenses, we're looking at how we can proceed with guidance for online classes while making sure we're staying within the parameters of the statutes and regulations. We also want to make sure that whatever format we develop for online classes is something that we can continue to use whether there is a crisis or not. Then another question we received a lot of is if we need to consider allowing a non-EMT or paramedic to drive the ambulance, as other states have passed waivers for this, which we already have a statute in place for this. That would be 190.105, which states that no license shall be required for an attendant of an ambulance which is rendering assistance in the case of an emergency, major catastrophe, or any other unforeseen event or series of events which jeopardizes the ability of the local ambulance service to promptly respond to emergencies. So the provision of the law allows you to consider using additional qualified staff to drive the ambulance, but it does create the clear expectation that medical personnel are attending the patients in a licensed ambulance and EMS agency. This provision needs to be reflected in the agency's policies and protocols if you're going to use it. And I'd also recommend that the agencies, that y'all speak with your attorneys regarding these provisions as well. And then the last thing I wanted to point out and talk about is the child care for emergency workers that we've received a lot of comments on. That there is a statewide team working to develop that list of child care needs for health care and other critical staff across the state, which includes EMS, fire, law enforcement, and our dispatch agencies. And the intent is to try to see if local school districts are able to provide the care. And the next step is to develop a list of child care needs from the critical employees. And in the email, there was a link provided that will take you to an online form to fill out if your children need that care in order to be able to work. If you receive that email, please distribute that to all your employees. And because once that information is gathered, DHSS will create a list of needs by school district, and they'll send to each district and see if they're able to help provide care. And at this time, I don't really have many details because this is coming from a different department than what I'm in. But if anybody has any questions, please contact childcare@health.mo.gov. The DHSS hotline, as of this morning, DHSS has 34 phone lines that are available that are being operated 24 hours a day by personnel who are working remotely. And currently we're receiving about 2,000 calls a day on that hotline. And just as a reminder, the DHSS website, if you go on there, you can see daily updates on the numbers from the state as well as in each county, and also find helpful information regarding COVID-19 and the response. So as this emergency changes daily and presents new challenges, we're working very hard to serve you, our providers and agencies, as quickly and efficiently as possible. And we appreciate, again, all the hard work that you all are doing. So, again, any questions that you have, please put them in the chat box, and I will turn it over to Dr. Braithwaite.
Thanks, Sam. I'm going to keep it fairly short. We had a regional medical directors meeting yesterday that I'm going to review a couple things with you. But I just kind of want to share with everybody that I think it's awesome that everybody's on this call and getting on Sam's e-list so that we can all stay coordinated, and that the things that we're doing are evidence and fact-based to the best extent that we can, and that we're not doing things because they seem like a good idea but don't have any evidence behind them. So I think particularly in this case, as the knowledge is evolving very quickly, that we are very intentional about doing things because it's the right thing to do and it's been demonstrated to be the right thing to do, failing that we're using best practices. And I want to extend my appreciation to the regional medical directors who have been very engaged and very well aligned as far as what we feel is important to do. So that allows our system of EMS regions to work and have the partners at the table that are within a region to make the decisions that are best within that region, but that there really aren't huge differences between regions as far as what the practices are and the protocols and guidelines to deal with this issue. So I think that's really important and a very good thing for our state. So I'm just going to highlight a couple of the things that we went through at the regional medical directors group for the state advisory committee yesterday, just so that you're aware. So there are three regions that have pushed forward regional protocols that are extremely similar, which is a good thing. Those have been approved by the Regional Medical Directors Committee. So that's the Central, East Region, and East Central and Southwest have pushed forward protocols, and we know the other regions are working on them so that we have a unified regional approach to how we deal with this. So that's the first piece. I'm going to just run through a couple of the motions with you just so that you're aware. The one of the key things is that, let me just read it to you, that for the purposes of mutual aid, emergency and disaster conditions, and for the continuity of patient care across regional boundaries, the protocols adopted by other regions may be applied and authorized in other Missouri EMS regions. So what that does for you is that when there are agencies that border regions or move between regions, that there isn't a concern about whose protocols am I supposed to use. Keep using that protocols from your home region, and there won't be an issue when you cross into another region. Next thing is that the regional this is more a medical practice issue, and the regional medical directors recognize that we've been dealing with medication shortages for many moons, and this is not helping it any. So as far as airway management, we had a statement that we made, which is that the regional medical directors group considers it medically appropriate for airway management to avoid nebulized medications, CPAP, and endotracheal intubation due to the aerosol risks, and that available alternatives be chosen instead. That doesn't mean you can't intubate. It just means that if you have another option, such as supraglottic airways, that is probably preferred within the parameters that your medical director provides to limit the aerosol risk to the providers that are taking care of that patient. Because as Sam already mentioned, workforce protection is going to be really key here in retaining capacity for the long run. And I see a lot of you are being very proactive about that, so good for you. Next thing is, from the medical director side, we're already talking about things in follow-up to both the governor's executive order of last week, as well as the guidance provided by Randall Williams, the director of DHSS, as far as what things that we can do. So one of those things, depending on how this escalates, may end up being treat and no transport protocols. So we are looking at queries, and we're looking at best practices from other states. You can read that as we stole stuff from some of the other states that are already using it, like from Washington State and from Maryland, that have already enacted some of those. So we're going to be able to provide those. We're going to have another regional medical directors meeting in 2 weeks. If this has escalated to the point where we need to start thinking about treat and no transport, that we'll be able to provide some guidance in that light, so that we have a fairly uniform practice across the state. We're not going to make you do what we suggest, but we're going to offer that as a resource for either your region or your individual medical directors. Just as far as the treat and no transport, I think that's a discussion, a bigger discussion about crisis standards of care. So depending on the region you're in is really going to dictate when you reach crisis standards. So obviously we want to keep the standard of care the same as long as we can, but we recognize that there may be a point in time where the resources available and the demand may be mismatched, and that different agencies may get to that point at very different times. So if you have a rural agency that has three people in it and two of them get exposed, you're going to reach crisis standards at a way different point in time than a large agency with a couple hundred people in it will, depending on demand. But in the big cities, if we end up having a high demand for 911, that may get us to that point as well. At least one of the regions is discussing, and I know some of the specific agencies have escalating triggers for when do we go to crisis standards of care. And if you don't have that in place, you should probably be looking at that. There's been some discussion in other states about whether there's a need to alter approach to certain disease states. So for those of you that remember the fun we had with Ebola, there were some alterations sometimes in management of cardiac arrest, for example, because that was felt to be futile if somebody who was likely Ebola infected had a cardiac arrest, and it was a huge risk, huge is an understatement, to the providers to try to resuscitate somebody where resuscitation really was going to be futile. None of the states have reached that point yet. We may never reach that point, but it's something we need to be thinking about. And so just be aware that the regional medical directors group is cognizant of that and discussing that, so that if we get to that a point, that we can provide some guidance. Continuing with some of the motions. So the next thing was that the regional medical directors support public safety answering points, providing queries for potential emerging infectious disease. A lot of places are doing this already. There are some 911 agencies that are not. We have interfaced with the state 911 board to recommend from the EMS side that that is very important that they do so, so that we can advise our responders of potential exposures, and so we can limit those provider exposures in that way by pre-notifying them that this may be a patient that is there at risk. The secondary part to that was that we also encourage them to provide pre-arrival instructions for specific critical complaints such as cardiac arrest when able. That will probably be a longer term thing, but we would love for them all to get on board with doing queries for potential emerging infectious disease for now. I think that was the main thing on the motions. There is authorization now through DHSS to do alternate destination transport. So if you, my understanding is, for example, the DMAT, I believe, has been requested for some tents, and there are certainly some hospitals that have set up off-site screening areas. So if patients meet specific criteria, again, those are captured within those regional protocols that were approved yesterday. So if patients meet specific criteria that they don't need to be transported necessarily to a hospital, by ambulance, that they can be taken to these alternate assessment sites. So that is a potential option. So depending on how demand escalates in your area, that is something that I would definitely be thinking about at your regional level of when EMS will be allowed to transport to these alternate destination sites in an effort to decompress the hospital. I know we are definitely on the steep upswing of this right now, where we're going to start seeing lots and lots more critical patients. I know a lot of the hospitals have been decompressing inpatients and canceling elective surgeries so that they can be prepared for this. But EMS is a key partner in this, that our previous single destination being the hospital may not be appropriate for everybody and is just going to horrifically overload the hospitals. And so partnering with the hospitals on this and being able to transport to alternate destinations patients that have been screened and are stable to do so is absolutely appropriate and is authorized under the governor's order. Let's see. Next thing on the that I have on the agenda is to talk about leave behind instructions. Again, we've circulated some samples through the regional medical directors group so that if we get to the point of doing treat and no transport, that or patients refuse transport after screening by EMS. So let's say for argument's sake, they have stable vital signs and a pulse ox that's over 92, 94, whatever your region has decided in your protocol, that we actually have leave behind self-quarantine and self-monitoring instructions that are available as a resource if that's something that your region is going to be doing. I think that is pretty much all that I had to share with you. Sam, I can bounce it back to you, or we can open it up for questions. And everybody, you can just unmute yourself if you want to ask a question. But I think since there are 227 of you on the call, I think it's probably easier if you just do it in the chat box.
Yeah.
So leave behind instructions should be, we can get to you through, should be able to get them through your regional medical director.
So there, as I'm scrolling through here, first of all, thank you all for your responses to my questions, and glad to see so many of you are doing the screening processes. I guess one of the other questions was if I could repeat the current numbers. Again, as of 2 p.m. yesterday, Missouri has 255 positive cases, with 5 deaths reported. That number is updated every day at 2 p.m. As the state has to provide an update to the CDC at 3 p.m. A couple of the other questions I'm seeing is that y'all did receive your orders, but you only received a partial order. And yes, actually that is the way they were filled, with the amount of cash that the state has. They wanted to make sure that at least all of the orders that were placed, which again was 114 that we had on that initial order, that you at least got some of your order, but we were not able to fulfill folks' entire orders. And just so y'all know, some of the orders were extremely large. Some of the requests were larger than even what the cash that the state has, so that's why we did that how we did. So Dr. Braithwaite, I don't know if you see any of the other questions on there.
Is that, I'm trying to scroll through here. My little fingers will let me. So as far as the N95 mask, it's probably just easier if I just talk. So regarding N95 masks and return to work after exposures, you should work with your medical director and region about, that's captured in some of the regional protocols that we approved yesterday already. The health department in the St. Louis area has provided widely different answers depending on whether you're in the city or the county. So while we would like to partner with the health department, it's really hard when you're 2 feet apart in the city and the county, you get completely different answers. So I would probably work with your medical director and or your regional medical director to discuss that. It is, if you've been exposed, it is very appropriate to go back to work with a mask and self-monitor. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an N95 mask. So that is an appropriate option. Talk to your local peeps and figure out what they're going to allow you to do. How do you get copies of regional protocols? Sam, I don't know if those are going to get posted with, I think the East Central Region one is certainly, I'd be surprised if it wasn't posted on the East Central Region website. You should be able to get those from your regional chair / medical director because they've got them. Yeah, and Sam has copies of them too. I don't know if he's going to post those on the BEMS website.
So I did see that the St. Louis region, East Central region ones are posted on the East Central region website in regards to the Central region and the other regions. I don't know if they've posted them to their websites or not, but we can certainly work on putting them on DHS's.
I forgot. I sent them to Kat Probst, and she's approved. They've put all the approved protocols on the MissouriAmbulance.org website. Thank you, Kat. I forgot that I'd done that.
Let's see.
We are trying to get this information out to you as best we can, folks, really and truly.
And as quickly as we possibly can. One of the questions I see there is that, will IMRAs be able to treat and no transport? That is allowed through the waiver, but it's really, that will also be up to your medical director to make that determination. Unless Dr. Braithwaite, do you have anything you'd want to add to that?
I don't think so. I'm trying to scroll back to the last questions that I missed. Let's see. So the online class options, what should the classes that were in session be doing now that we cannot meet in person? Can we continue with a basic online course to keep them going, or do we need to stop altogether? I'm going to bounce that one to you, Sam.
Let's see. No, you can continue to do the basic online course. With your online courses, one of the things that you need to keep in mind is that they need to meet the same requirements as the online courses receive continuing education units. And that is that the online courses have to be done live. You have to have a way to make sure that your students are there in person and be able to ask and answer questions. So those are just a few of the things. As I said, we will be putting together those guidelines. We are putting together those guidelines and hope to have them out soon.
There's a question on latest standards for quarantining staff if they've been exposed. Kind of along the lines of that N95 question, your region has probably, and your regional medical directors have probably decided what the recommendation should be. And I would follow that recommendation. But like I said, if they've only been exposed and they're asymptomatic, there should be no problem with them going to work with a mask on. And of course, prevention's the key. So using appropriate PPE, donning and doffing, and looking at those wonderful CDC videos on how to do that correctly is important. First responders need to be tested if symptomatic, since they're frontline responders. That's a comment, I guess, more than a question. We have, since testing is just starting to ramp up, we haven't been able to get some people tested that probably really should have been, but I'm hoping that'll loosen up soon. But that is for sure out of my hands. Calculating burn rate on PPE. I don't have a good answer for that. Do you have a good answer for that, Sam?
No, I do not. I would have turfed that one back to you.
If anybody else on the call has sat down and figured out, one of you smart figuring people has figured out how to do that, please share that with everybody else, because everybody'd like to know. And if you've got some clever way to do that and you can send it to Cap Probes to put on the Missouri Ambulance website, that would probably be awesome too. Let's see. Sam, can you clarify the provisional licensure issue? Provisional licensure clarification. The state is looking into the National Registry statement, but as of now, it is not applicable. Is that correct?
Yes, as of right now, it is not applicable. That is correct.
All righty. What are we going to do about testing our exposed personnel? We are attempting a private lab, but that has been slow in progress. Yeah, so if I only knew. it is. Yeah, who do you put the fire under? I'm guessing it's probably the health department, to be perfectly honest with you. Or if you have a good hospital partner that has access to a bunch of tests, maybe they can do it. I think as of 2 days ago at Barnes, we only had up to 200 tests a day. And so I don't know who they were using them on, but I know we're starting to get a whole bunch of ICU patients, and I expect a lot of them are going to those. So Shirley, if you can get SSM to start testing the providers, please let us know. Okay, there's from Jason. ESO has a burn rate example out of Texas. And can students do skills checkoffs with preceptors at their workplace?
If the instructors are willing to do the skills checkoff one-on-one at the ambulance station or firehouse, that is perfectly acceptable.
And then next question is on when can we expect a response to the provisional license paramedics who've completed all but skills exam, which have been indefinitely postponed. Also about asking about getting the access to fingerprinting for the license. And while you're thinking on that, some Oregon County posted the burn rate calculator of PPE on the CDC website link. So that's out there for you.
Well, in regards to the provisional licensing, as I stated earlier, we are working on that. But we also have to still operate within the parameters of state statutes and regulations. So we hope to have that by the end of this week, to have those guidelines out for you. And as far as fingerprints obtained for licensing, as of right now, yes, the Missouri Highway Patrol is, they've closed down their walk-up window, but we have not received any information that any of the Identigo sites or anywhere else have closed. So you should still be able to go and get your fingerprints.
Okay, is the forthcoming online relicensure website on hold at this time? And then can the scenarios be done during live videos with students?
So the online relicensure website is not on hold. Actually, we will be putting out an email here, hopefully again within the next couple of days. It is for the initial licensures. We are ready to go live with it on April 1st. However, in order to get the website advertised. We will probably make that live April 6th. The renewal licensures will go, are scheduled to go live May the 1st. And along that same subject, I'd like to remind everybody that the NMSIS version 3.4, we are going live with that on April 1st. So all of your reports will be going into the NMSIS data bank starting April 1st. As far as the scenarios being done during live videos with the students, I think that would be perfectly acceptable.
Let's see, comment that Mercy won't test an exposed employee until they require hospitalization. There it is. What is the state stance on the AHA recommendation for extending expiration dates?
So with the AHA extensions, we are looking at all of those with any of our folks who are renewing their licensure. So if you have any questions on that, please contact your regional inspector.
Why are we not testing our first responders on the front lines? It amazes me we don't have this completed and now have real-time exercise and should have one protocol instead of local health department making decisions. There has to be an authority figure and that should be the state. I don't have an answer for you. I think the horse is out of the barn now, and I would venture to guess that a significant number of people have been infected, even if they are not affected or ill. So at this point, we should all be monitoring ourselves for symptoms, because I would assume that every single one of us that is out in the field has been exposed. That would be my assumption. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Somebody else has better information, please jump in. But I think the easiest thing is to assume that you've been exposed, and if you develop symptoms, to have a low threshold to notify and to tell somebody that you've developed symptoms, because that seems to be the only way to get a test nowadays. As a licensed EMRA, will there be any allowances for us to transport if our contracted agency has a drastic decrease in staff due to the virus?
So I guess if that question is asking, will they be able to transport in a vehicle other than a licensed ambulance? The answer to that at this time would be no, because that is a state statute.
Okay, then there's a link for the ESO COVID information. Any issues with CMS reimbursement on provisional licensure? What if they don't eventually pass skills tests?
As far as CMS reimbursement on the provisional license, I don't have an answer to that, but we'll have to. I'd have to look into it. And if they, as far as the skills test is concerned, again, that is something that we're looking at as far as the provisional license is concerned.
Then there's a question, can the time frame for developing treat and release be moved up? We will be at the point of needing that much sooner than 2 weeks possibly. And I get that, which is part of why we're already circulating that. And since this thing is changing day by day, if we need to ramp up and push something like this through, some of the things that we already have in the hopper to look at are kind of there and being thought about and being worked on, so that if it's something that we need to move on more quickly, some of these things from the regional medical directors meeting from yesterday, I'm sure will get pushed forward to the appropriate people at DHSS, so that if we need to have some action from DHSS to direct that, that we can do so. It's being pushed to the Office of General Counsel and so forth. So we are trying to be in a position to move sooner if we need to. Is that fair to say, Sam?
Yes.
Update on the state ventilator cash. So Sam, do you know the numbers off the top of your head? I do know that they just ordered replacement batteries for half the cash, and those all should be up and running this week. I want to say there's a couple hundred, but I do not know that for sure, so don't quote me on that. And I know they are placing another order for additional ventilators. So,
yeah. So as far as
your answer,
as far as the state ventilator cash is concerned, it's the number I've been told is actually more like 100. However, they are placing another order. However, the ones that are in the cash, they were not made specifically for ambulance transport. They could possibly be used in an ambulance, but they're not made for ambulances, so they may not be able to withstand the treatment that a piece of equipment normally gets put through in the back of an ambulance.
Yeah, and I think those vents are largely for either hospitals or temporary hospital facilities. I don't know that those were meant for ambulances, honestly. Go ahead, Sam. Were you going to make a comment?
No, I was just going to agree with that.
Okay. Gene, the signs and symptoms went through our community in December. Everybody had these symptoms and was tested for flu A and B and strep and were all negative and lasted 5 to 10 days. Is it possible it was COVID-19 before we knew about it? It is possible, but I guess we will never know unless we can start testing for immunity, which we can't even get tested for the disease right now. So I'm not terribly optimistic about that, but it is entirely possible that that's the case. And some of you know I got a vicious pneumonia in December, so who knows? Maybe I had it already too. On the front end of the curve, always. Medic One asking if there are more surgical masks and gowns and available. And Sam, that's for you.
I do know they've placed another order to the SNS. As of now, as far as surgical masks and gowns, they're very, very low on those. But the N95s, they still have a pretty good supply of those. And if you didn't receive your first order, it really depends, I think, on when you placed it. Like I said, they're collecting those orders once a week on Wednesdays. So I would, if you haven't received your order and you placed it within the last week or so, follow up with your Healthcare Coalition representative.
So they are asking if they need to keep resubmitting weekly on the things that they don't receive.
Again, follow up with your HCC rep.
There you go. What would you suggest about people donating homemade masks? Would it be acceptable to place them on the patient? So I think the homemade masks are really sweet, but they, unless they're one of the ones that's actually been created with filters, is probably not going to do anything major, and it's not going to be adequate PPE. So I honestly was thinking about, over my N95 mask, of putting one of the homemade masks on the outside, but I'm not relying on the homemade mask to be the thing that protects me, because it's not meant for that, and it's not going to be adequate. We're talking with a representative to see. Okay, so Shirley's working on seeing if she can get first responder testing. You go, Shirley. All right, so I think that one's taken care of. People are being sent home with positives to self-monitor. Is there any follow-up evaluation through video conferencing or phone calls? I'm sure this lies on the health department, but there could be a place for this in our community, especially the MRES. So that is entirely possible. I know that at least BJC is starting telemedicine, and I think one of the other hospital systems in the St. Louis area is doing it. I wouldn't be surprised if places elsewhere are starting to do e-visits and video visits for follow-up on these patients to determine whether they are progressing, or if they need to be seen in a care facility or even an alternate care facility to see if they're doing okay. So I think that's primarily going to be driven by the health department, but I see a number of the hospital systems stepping up to the plate, because since over the past number of years we've significantly defunded health departments, they don't have the capacity to do all this kind of stuff. So I think this is going to be something that hospital systems are probably going to end up trying to fill that void. Comment about AHA recommending a 60-day extension on all disciplines so that it can be extended. So there's your answer for the AHA. And clarifying, if somebody's around a suspected COVID patient, they should start wearing like a surgical mask. It doesn't have to be N95. And that was one of the things that the regional medical directors passed, is because otherwise we're not going to have the N95s for the aerosol generating procedures that we really need them for. So surgical mask is appropriate. Who is following up the positives? And the health department said they try. I know internally our hospital system is following up with the positives and notifying the health department rather than leaving it on the health department. Sam, what's our position on cleaning and reusing N95s?
Follow CDC guidelines.
I knew that was going to be it. So follow the CDC guidelines on cleaning and reusing N95s. I know I've seen on social media all kinds of crazy things that people are doing, some of which may work and some of which may not. I would follow the CDC recommendations for now, because as the actual evidence evolves, it will come through the CDC and become something that we can actually rely on, because I'd hate to think we're cleaning our N95 masks in a way that actually causes the mask itself to break down and we're actually making ourselves at greater risk. So please use the CDC recommendations on reusing N95 masks. Let's see. Medic One's been using the EMS liaison at St. Louis County. All right. I think we're at the bottom of the questions. Yay. Oh, Catherine West. Yes. For anybody that doesn't know, she is AKA the cootie queen. She's the one that does all the OSHA risk procedures. So she also said that N95 is to be reserved for aerosol procedures and surgical masks are okay for everything else. And yes, Ben, please share the link for that. And maybe Kat can put that on the MOAMS, Missouri Ambulance website too. Any other questions for the good of the order? If there are needs that you all see at a local or regional level that we need to take up with the regional medical directors group, please let Sam and myself know so that we can put that out there or start gathering information before our next meeting. We are going to be meeting again on April the 8th so that as this thing evolves, which we expect it will, that we're at least ready to provide some guidance at the state level and be able to support you guys in doing what you're doing. I want to thank Sam for everything he's been doing and keeping us kind of in front of DHSS and in front of the governor to try to help get us the support that we need. I know it's been a bumpy road, but I appreciate everything that Sam's doing for us. And I appreciate everything that you guys are doing to be proactive and coordinated and to be looking out for your people and looking out for your community. So thank you all for everything that you're doing. Stay safe, stay well. Wear your masks, wash your hands.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody.
Talk to you next time.
Thank you.